5880-1057, the Fan here on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw. Orioles went so great in Houston. Slugfest, they lose on Friday. And then they go quietly on Saturday and Sunday. The only offense, two Jordan Westberg solo home runs. And that was all she wrote. Good news is Yankees lost 2 out of 3 to Atlanta at home. So the Birds only lose a game in the standings, but back home tonight against the red-hot Cleveland Indians. Here to talk about that and what's happening down on the farm and beyond from the Baltimore Banner. Let's talk some Orioles baseball with our next guest, John Mioli. John, good morning. What's happening?
Oh, not much. What's happening over there?
A little this, a little that, to be totally honest with you. Before we get to the meat and potatoes, Hester Kerstad's coming up, but he gets plunked 3 times yesterday. Then he gets ejected, so any idea why he got ejected, or was it just kind of the home plate ump going, hey, you've had enough. We're just getting you out of here before you get hurt.
Yeah, they're calling you up.
He's like, hey, you get out of here.
You know, when I played Little League Baseball, I was terrified of getting hit with a pitch. I stand in like the back corner of the batter's box. I had no interest in getting hit with a pitch. So I understand why Hester Kerstad, after it happened 3 times, might have been a little upset about it. How that manifested itself might have been in some comments or language that the umpire deemed inappropriate. I can only speculate from watching the video, but it seemed like Hester Kerstad was letting the pitcher know that he should probably stop hitting him and his teammates, and it wasn't well received. But, you know, there's a lot of guys who can say, you know, they hit their way to the majors or fielded their way to the majors and pitched their way to the majors. And not a lot of guys who could say I got ejected and ended up in the big league. So, you know, shout out to him for that.
Now, he's coming up. It looks like it's not officially announced by the Orioles yet, John, but his anticipated role will be what? And we know he can hit. He's been doing that throughout his career at a little league through high school and was raking at Arkansas, and he's raked at the minor league level for the Birds. How much better defensively is he than, you know, maybe we've seen? And is there more to the equation with the glove here?
I think he's probably, you know, a fine corner outfielder. There's center fielders who play corner outfield spots like Austin Hayes, and then there's, you know, fine corner outfielders like you have in Anthony Santander. I would put Hester Kerstad probably in the latter category. You know, I remember when the Orioles traded for Mark Trumbull all those years ago, and Dan Duquette was on the radio, and they asked what position was best for him, and he said in the batter's box. You know, that was kind of why they brought him in. I think that's what Hester Kerstad's going to be here for as well. I don't know that it's going to be a regular role. We have 2+ months of evidence that the Orioles like having one of those left-handed, you know, corner slugger bats on the bench for if they need one, but also a lot of evidence that it's hard to supplant, the outfielders they have. Maybe there is going to be an avenue for Hester Kerstad to play a little more than some of the people in that role have been in, because Colton Cowser hasn't been swinging the bat like he did in April now for a decent long stretch. He also defends really well, so you know, it's going to be a balance for Brandon Hyde, but I think Hester Kerstad is going to be here to slug when he gets the chance.
Now, John, with the Orioles, you know, they have one scheduled day off in June, which has been exhausted a week ago. They roll through New York, then they get swept in Houston. I know Mountcastle was asked about it yesterday after the loss. I guess they would never admit it, but is the schedule maybe starting to take its toll on them just a little bit?
Perhaps. I'm not going to, you know, I think these guys are generally very tired all the time. There's no getting around that. This is, you know, they play most days anyways, even when there's nice stretches for off days. You know, it's funny when we go in there into the clubhouse after the team has an off day and you ask guys what they did, they just say nothing. You know, they're just like kind of letting their bodies heal. Some of them will go outside just to know that outside exists, and then they'll get back on their couch and rest. It's very tired to play every day. I'm sure there's a part of that that's happening right now, but this is a team that, you know, it's I guess noteworthy that they lost these 3 games in a row, because that's not really what they do. They usually have a bounce back game or a fight back in the last game of the series to kind of salvage that. And they haven't. So you can say that there's a little bit of a, you know, schedule going on. They're also playing a lot of really good and talented teams right now. Not to say that is a major factor, but, you know, there are good teams on the schedule, and there's a lot of games on the schedule, and these stretches are also just going to happen as the season goes on.
John Mioli, Baltimore Banner, joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, talking Orioles back home tonight for the first place Cleveland Guardians. All right, the starting pitching, bullpen, quite frankly. We know what the Orioles need. One guy's off the list, we assume, with Jesus Luzardo. I know Jack Flaherty has been mentioned as a guy that could be available for a team willing to make that sort of sacrifice to get him. Tanner Scott's name, former Oriole, he's been mentioned. What are the tea leaves saying for you right now, John, knowing that a move's going to be happening with a lot of teams needing some pitching right now?
Yeah, I mean, this is a challenging, this is a challenging thing for me to kind of wrap my head around and think about what I, actually think about it. I think that you can look at the Orioles pitching staff and rotation and acknowledge, that it's still pretty good. Even without a Kyle Bradish and a John Means and a Tyler Wells, and even with Danny Coulomb out for a while, this is still a really good pitching staff in a lot of ways. The market for pitching during the season is a really, really challenging one to be a part of. We know the Orioles, last year they dipped their toes into being buyers, and they did it in a very measured way. And, Michael Elias himself said after they were eliminated from the playoffs, it wasn't the most impactful way. So they're going to have to balance wanting to make moves that can meaningfully help this team get into and through the postseason with sticking to their principles, which are not to overpay in a market like this. And I don't think there's going to be a phone call that anyone in the Orioles front office makes to any of the other 29 teams where the other team's not going to know, hey, these guys kind of need this pitching. Like, let's ask for more than we think we're going to get. The Orioles aren't really going to participate in that. So we're basically talking about whether they think that they can ride this pitching staff to the playoffs and hope for the best, or if they're going to try to upgrade so that not only do you know you're getting to the playoffs, but you are going to, perform well and potentially win some series when you're doing there. I think that's going to be the balance. I'm not going to dive, 10 toes into, they're going to make some big moves, because that's just not what we've seen happen outside the Corbin Burns trade in the offseason. And I think that in-season prices are going to make it challenging for that to happen again. That said, it seems pretty clear something does need to happen.
Hey, John, tell me about Kramer. I mean, he struggled last night, 2/3 of an inning, 39 pitches. What do you think is going to happen with him in the next week?
Yeah, that's a challenging circumstance. Without seeing what actually happened or what was going on there in Norfolk, you it's hard to know. I know the Orioles would have wanted to get a lot more, pitches under his belt, but if they see, when they're looking back at the outing that the stuff wasn't there, maybe they'll have him take another rehab outing. But it's also some guys just aren't able to lock in and be their best selves in those rehab type environments. Maybe they're trying to feel for stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they say, hey, even if it's got to be short, even if we have to have somebody, some kind of long reliever, whoever's rotation spot you're taking behind you ready to go, maybe they say that the 4 or 5 innings that they think Dean Kramer can give them, if he's healthy and ready, is enough to have him back on the roster, because, Brandon Hyde said it himself yesterday, they need him and they need to know what they have in him. And I don't know if, trying to check some kind of box of having a successful start in Norfolk is going to do the trick, but I'm fascinated to see how that plays out.
Hey, John, I'll say this. Mullen's body language is so much better now.
And it looks like, I agree. And I think there's, I think it's really challenging to go through a spell like he went through. I believe I heard it on one of the broadcasts. I don't want to misattribute it to a coach or anything, but that Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes kind of started feeding off each other negatively as they were both struggling, and positively as they both got going. There's, I can't imagine what it was like for Cedric Mullins to watch somebody who's played his entire career with, basically lose his spot over the course of one series with Colton Cowser just getting really hot, and all of a sudden Austin Hayes is on the bench. He's looking over thinking, shoot, is that going to happen to me at some point? And that kind of, seems like it coincided with the Cedric Mullins' kind of downswing. And I think it's a credit to the coaches that worked with him. It's a credit to Cedric himself. It's a credit to the Orioles for sticking with him, that, you put in the work and you do what you can do well, and you go out there and you don't pack it in every single day, and you come out the other side. I think there's a lot of upside to having a productive and healthy Cedric Mullins in this lineup, the same the way they're finding with Austin Hayes now. It's just a matter of sticking with these guys. And we're talking about two all-star caliber outfielders who did not perform up to their standards for the first 2-ish months of the season. And this was still one of the best teams in baseball without those guys doing that. So I think that when you look at where this team can go, having a Cedric Mullins back to being Cedric Mullins, everyone, you know, believes he can be, is going to be a pretty strong thing to have.
John Mioli, Baltimore Banner, real quick. John, Cleveland, projected wins by Pagoda, 83. They're going to surpass that in a big way right now. Better record than the Orioles. Why are they so good so far?
That's a team that has their pitching apparatus down pat. They know what they're looking for when they're trying to identify pitchers. They know what they're looking for and how to develop them, and they get them to the big leagues really well. They know that division is not as bad as it has been in the past. It's still not necessarily great, but I think that's a team that, you know, I think that they've been doing what they've been doing for a long time, and, you know, maybe we'll be sitting here in 10 years having the same conversation about the Orioles, and, like, they locked in on what they like and what they work with well in the draft and development, and they make good trades, and they consistently perform, you know, better than expectations. And I think that's a team that the Orioles are probably looking at a lot, and how to sustain things and how to, you know, get to the next level, and we're going to see it in person this week here.
What's happening at the Baltimore Banner on this Monday, John Mioli?
A ton. There's a really interesting story about the attendance from my pal Daniel Allentuck, and how the Orioles have been able to bring people back to the ballpark. Winning has a lot to do with that, but anyone who's been there has also noticed some changes and some cool things happening, so I think that's worth everybody checking out for sure.
John, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the Cleveland Guardians, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
All right, sounds great. Thank you.
There's John Mioli, everybody. We'll come back, whip around what happened in the world of sports over the weekend. Well, a few things of interest. Certainly some interesting things happened on this date in Orioles and sports history, June the 24th. And we'll talk Ravens. Todd Karpovich, BaltimoreSports.com, less than a month out from training camp. 88-81-057, the Fan, whip around here on this Monday. Cleveland Cavaliers have a new coach, Kenny Atkinson, former head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, was recently an assistant coach for Steve Kerr out in Golden State, so this will be his second go-around as a head coach. A lot of talk that James Borrego was going to be the head coach there in Cleveland. Looks like he could be the front runner now in Detroit for the Pistons, where he has a connection with Trajan Langdon, who is the new GM there with the Detroit Pistons. So that's your NBA coaching news. Kenny Atkinson, now the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Stanley Cup playoffs, the finals. That's right, after all these months. Training camps in September. Season starts in October. And here we are, last week of June, and the season finally comes to an end. But the only reason we're talking about it tonight is because this happened over the weekend.
Again, they struggle up high. Here's an empty net for McLeod. 4-1, Edmonton.
Empty netter there. Added another one. 5-1 was the final score. That's ESPN, ABC on the call as the Oilers drub the Panthers. It got out of control late because they were chasing. But the series now tied at 3 games apiece. Game 7 tonight. 8 o'clock puck drop down in Florida as the Panthers try to avoid becoming the first team since the 1942. Whoever lost to the Maple Leafs to blow an 0-3 or a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, they thought the goal that got called back in the game the other night was, you know, kind of change of momentum. But so be it. It's over and done with. Florida's got to get back to playing Florida hockey, which is defense. They got to play physical. They got to play defensively. They got to play in control the puck in the offensive end. They can't give open space to the skill of Edmonton. That's going to be and Bobrovsky's got to be Bobrovsky of games 1, 2, and 3. He's got to stop some breakaways. He's got to make some big saves for them and not give up easy goals. And the crowd's going to be crazy tonight. McDavid's been spectacular. And he, win or lose, he's probably still going to be the MVP.
Of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Stanley Cup Finals, yeah. So I think Florida wins tonight, Bob. I think, you know, Bobrovsky, because Bobrovsky killed him last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. And now maybe he's getting memories of last year. I don't know. But he's 3 great games, 3 bad games. And when he's played great games, they win. So he's going to have to play good. And in hockey, when you're home, you get the last shift on the ice. You can put out who you want against their people. So Borkov, number 16, the captain for Florida, when they're at home, he's usually out against McDavid. They like him playing against McDavid. So when you're at home, you get the last opportunity. So you'll probably see a lot of that tonight.
So game 7, 8 o'clock puck drop. We'll be talking about the new Stanley Cup champions tomorrow because it was Vegas last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bounced, what, in the first round?
Yeah.
Here in 2024. College World Series. That's going to a finale. That is tonight because Tennessee beat Texas A&M 4-1. So they even that series at a game apiece. Texas A&M wins 9-5 in the opener. A lot of hard aluminum in these two games, but the Vols and the Aggies, they decide the champions of men's college baseball tonight, coming up on ESPN. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, this day in sports history. It is June 24th. How about 1992? Portland, Oregon, NBA draft. Number one pick.
1992. Shaq.
Shaq Attack.
Was it?
Yes, it was. Out of LSU,
how about
Orlando.
That, Norm?
You didn't say it with great confidence, though.
No, I did.
Who was number two? That's right.
I don't
stay
even
in your lane. Alonzo Mourning was out of Georgetown. Christian Laettner was number three. Mourning and Shaq Attack Hall of Famers. Laettner won a gold medal that year. He was on the dream team, back to back national titles.
How many minutes did he get?
At Duke, he didn't play a lot at all. But screw those three guys. Number seven overall, the Wizard, Walt Williams, yeah. University of Maryland, Sacramento. 1998 NBA draft, Vancouver. First pick was?
98. I don't know.
He was a bust. Michael Olowokandi.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him, Norm?
Candyman?
Candyman. Candyman can't.
Yeah.
Sammy Davis could. Candyman couldn't. Mike Bibby was number two to Vancouver. And Rafe LaFrance. Out of Kansas was number three. Number four was Antoine Jameson. Number five was Vince Carter. They were then traded for each other. Dirk Nowitzki was number nine. Oh. And Paul Pierce was number 10. Oops.
Yeah.
So the top half of that draft did not go well. This day in Orioles history, 1974. 50 years ago today, Bobby Grich hits a two-run homer. Brooksy! He drove in a run. Doyle Alexander, complete game. Orioles beat the Tigers 3-1. 1997 in Milwaukee. Orioles beat the Brewers 6-2. Pete Incaviglia went deep. Robbie Alomar, Cal Ripken both had two ribbies. Sean Boskey got the win. I'm like, what? I forgot about that guy. Arthur Rhodes got the save. 2012, Nolan, you were alive. And maybe you remember this because I don't. Oriole Park and Camden Yards. Matt Wieters hit a two-run homer, bottom of the eighth, as the Orioles stunned Davey Johnson's Nationals 2-1. Pedro Strop got the win in relief of Jake Arrieta, who pitched well that day. Jim Johnson got his 22nd save. And we all remember this because it happened a year ago today. Oriole Park at Camden Yards. The outfielder everyone loved to hate, Ryan McKenna, hit a two-run walk-off homer. Bottom of the 10th, because the Mountain blew the save, gave up a home run to Mike Ford in the top of the 9th. But McKenna saves the day. Tony Taters and Aaron Hicks both went deep. And Mike Bauman got the win as the Orioles stunned the Mariners 6-4. Orioles trying to get back in the win column tonight. And we'll get into that as the show progresses. But when we come back, Todd Karpovich, BaltimoreSports.com, talk about the Ravens less than a month away from training camp. Zach Orr replaces Mike McDonald. Not only does Mike McDonald leave, a lot of assistant coaches leave to become DCs elsewhere. Is this a problem for the Ravens? 5880-1057 The Fan here on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend, everyone. The Orioles didn't. Talk more about that. Show goes on. We're less than a month away from training camp 2024. Bob Eddie, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass. Here to talk about the upcoming camp process for the Ravens. Expectations are high. From BaltimoreSports.com, let's welcome back to the show our buddy Todd Karpovich. Todd, what's happening?
What's up, Todd?
What's up, guys?
All right, Todd, we'll start with Zach Orr replacing Mike McDonald as the defensive coordinator. And, you know, if you think about it, all right, he just ascended. He's moved rapidly up through the ranks as a coach. Question is, concern level for you with the fact that he hasn't called plays, and his staff replacements for the Denard Wilsons and the Anthony Weavers of the world are relatively young in NFL terms as coaches themselves.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's going to be some hiccups, but I think, you know, John Harbaugh is an experienced coach, and he's going to put a support system in there for Zach Orr until he gets comfortable. In addition, you know, Orr's already said, you know, they're not going to reinvent the wheel here. You know, they're going to run some of the same playbook they had under Mike McDonald, which would be smart considering the transition. He said he'll add more wrinkles, but, you know, generally speaking, the base defense will be there. The guys like him. The question mark is he's going to be able to call all the plays with the defensive line, linebacker, secondary. So that's going to be the biggest challenge for him. He said he'll call plays on the sideline, so he's right in front of the action. But, yeah, there's going to be an adjustment there. But I think you'll see the Raiders being aggressive defense, and I think the players are going to rally around him. I think he'll be okay.
Now, staying on defense, on the defensive line in particular, your opinion, most likely to have a bigger year than they did in 23, Broderick Washington or Travis Jones?
I think Broderick Washington, man, he's looking really good in camp. You know, he's sort of an unsung guy, you know, because he plays a certain amount of DK's shadow. But he's looked really good in camp, came in shape, he's aggressive. I think he'll get more chances to get to the quarterback, you know, same amount of DK did. And don't get me wrong, Travis Jones is a good player. He's played solid also throughout camp. But he's been solid throughout his career with the Ravens. But I think you're going to see more from Broderick Washington this year, especially getting to the quarterback.
Hey, Todd, have we heard about any receivers being in Miami yet?
Lamar, you know, he says they got to come to him. You know, and Flowers is already down there. I'm not sure those two will work out. I don't know where Bateman trains. I could see, you know.
Bateman trains in Arizona.
Yeah, with Mark Andrews. I can see Aguilar going down there, maybe. And Tom Wallace maybe throwing the ball around. But, you know, I don't think this is. It's going to be a formal meeting the way the Ravens would like it to be. I think they're going to wait the training camp to get together and sort of get on the same page. Now, Lamar has played with all these guys the previous season. He's a two-time MVP. So I don't think it's overly concerning, but it would look good with the eye test if they all got together and practiced down in Florida.
Hey, Todd, when the season's over, the top four receivers with attempts, catches, is going to be who?
I think Flowers. Well, including the tight ends.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. It'll be Flowers, Andrews. I think likely, and then maybe even Walker. You know, before Bateman. You know, we'll see. They want to get Bateman more involved in this offense. But again, you know, what's the trust factor there with Lamar? You know, he had some moments in mandatory minicamp where he looked at his OTAs, he looked like he's pouting a little bit because the ball wasn't coming his way. So we'll see. You know, it's supposed to be a breakout year for Bateman. He got a contract, but we'll have to see. I think Andrews is still going to be Lamar's go-to guy. I think the Lakers are going to play a bigger role in offense, and Flowers is the guy who's going to do in his rookie season. I think Flowers and Andrews have the best chance of 1,000-yard receiving seasons.
Now, Todd, I think it was you that wrote about likely being at the tight end camp with all the tight ends. Talk about that a little bit.
He was Travis Kelce, Kittle, you know, so he's in there with guys who are proven players. And I think that's a good rapport. You know, it's sort of a charity event also, Tight End University. It's down in Nashville, but you know that's you know, like this guy who's worked out. He's worked out hard throughout the offseason, came in and practiced all the OTAs, mandatory minicamp, and now he's doing his work for the summer. And that was John Harbaugh's message, too. Make sure you do your work, you know. He expects these guys to come in July on that Saturday and be ready to practice. He's not spending time getting these guys back into shape, you know. They got to hit the ground running, and the Ravens, you know, this is going to be a big year for them. You know, they want to push for a Super Bowl. Now the question is, do they have the depth to do that? We'll see.
Hey, Todd, I thought my impressions of likely was – that's the most athletic I've ever seen him look. And he just stood out. I you know, he was a guy that you noticed.
Yeah, he's a guy, well, he's making one-handed grabs. He's creating matchup problems. You know, linebackers can't cover him, you know. So you got to put his, you know, I mean, a double team with a safety in a corner. He's a guy who can also play the wide receiver and get downfield. So, yeah, he's a major weapon. And I think they will use a lot more two tight end sets with him and Andrews this year. But I think like we can go outside and play him more like a receiver. And that's gonna create some serious matchup problems if both those guys can stay healthy.
All right, Todd. We got Stanley at left tackle. And I'm guessing Voorhees' job to lose at the left guard. Then we got Lindebaum. And then who do we have?
I think right now we got, you know, Ben Cleveland at right guard. But Josh Jones had a really good camp. He looked really good, and they're really high on him. I think he surprised them with his ability to play. And I think, you know, Rosengarten at right tackle, you know, he's a second round pick. He's a guy also who's coming from big time program. So I think it's his job to lose. Cleveland and Jones in that right guard spot is interesting. Voorhees, they're high on him too. And they really said, you know, they like McCarry being in that six man role because he can play all five positions. He'd be a swing guy. You know, that's a valuable piece. And, of course, you know, Jose Alexander, he moved all these guys around. You know, he had Voorhees playing center at some point, you know. So they like versatility. But right now, I think you got Stanley at left tackle, Voorhees left guard, Lindelbaum at center, Cleveland with the edge over Jones at right guard, and then Rosengarten at right tackle over Flaley.
Todd Karpovich, BaltimoreSports.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Going back to the defense guy, had a bust-out year. At 23, was Brandon Stevens. Were the Ravens impressed enough, Todd, to start talking extension with him?
Yeah, I think I said that this week. I think they'll give Stevens another extension for the Humphrey one. He's a guy who works hard. He likes it here. He's a team guy. You know, he's a guy who's gotten better every single year. He can play safety. You know, he's a versatile guy. He can play, you know, multiple positions, and he's a good tackler. So yeah, I think you're going to see Stevens the extension, and then you see Wiggins move into that role for Humphrey as they move forward here. And they got TJ Campbell also, who can also play. Now there's a reason they drafted two cornerbacks this year.
All right, Todd, what's happening at BaltimoreSports.com here on this Monday?
Still covering the Ravens every day. We know it's a little bit down period here. Still some news, and we're right in the training camp. Also covering the Orioles, looking to bounce back from it. Disappointing series in Houston.
Yeah, that was a debacle. But we're picking them Ravens crumbs. We're going to eat every inch of meat off that bone, Todd, if you know what I'm saying.
That's the way to go.
There you go. All right, Todd, have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
There's Todd Karpovich, fellow East Baltimorean, Upper Fells Point, as they say, back in the hood when we come back. Well, here's a guy who knows all about it. He's worldly. He's Nolan McGraw's Funhouse is going to be electricity personified. News from the Nest. Talk more about Zach Orr versus Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald early in his tenure as Ravens defensive coordinator. Didn't go well, but season-wide, they were really good, and they were great last year. That's why he's the head coach in Seattle. Buy or sell, 12-15. Let's count that money because it was a busy weekend in the spending world. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. What's happening, everybody? Orioles back on the diamond tonight after getting swept in Houston. 6:35 first pitch, Baltimore baseball tonight with yours truly, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken. Joe LaCroix is going to be there. Cordell's Woodland, he'll be popping by. So we're going to be at Pickles. Come on by and say hello. Probably get there about 4 o'clock or so. Brandon Hyde's going to meet with the media at 3:30. Tanner Bibee, 5-2, 365 for Cleveland. He'll be on the hill. They've won 5 in a row. They just swept the Blue Jays. Cade Povich, he makes his third start. Or is it his fourth start? Fourth start. As he's searching for that first win. Orioles are trying to get a win after Houston put those bats in the slumberland on Saturday and Sunday. We'll talk about the Indians, by the way. Why are they so good? A team projected to be middle of the pack in their own division. Not even, you know, if they were snipping 500, barely above it. Right now, they have the second-best record in the American League. From Cleveland.com, Joe Noga is going to be joining us, and we'll talk about the job that Stephen Vogt has done as the skipper there. Got NFL lunch coming up at 1. Nate Davis, USA Today, talks about NFL with him, and then news from the Nest, of course, every day at noon. But let's bring Nolan McGraw in. Quick draw, how you feeling?
Feeling good. I think we need to get a piggy bank going here every time you say Indians instead of Guardians.
Did I say
the tax? You're a couple in today already.
Okay.
But over the next 3 days, we might...
Well, we got to wait till buy or sell comes along, right. See if I got any money. I might not have any money to put in that little till. Yes, the Guardians, excuse me.
We take from your 401k and put it here in the jar.
Yeah, well, it's like how many times we're going to call them the San Diego Chargers the week that the Ravens go there.
Oh, that'll be continuing in 10 years.
And we still call them the Oakland Raiders, for crying out loud. It is what it is.
Well,
thanks for pointing that out.
Yes, I'll be sure to mention it every time. But
yes,
obviously not ideal. You get swept over the weekend. The way I look at it, all right, they're clearly gassed. You watch them play. There's just something different. When they got swept a month ago against the Cardinals, they played bad, but they didn't look like this. They were still playing their kind of game. They had errors. They were, you know, a mess all over the place. How did they respond after getting swept? 4-game series against the White Sox, a terrible team, but still, you handle your business, 4-game sweep. How do you respond here against Cleveland, a much better team, But to me, that'll tell the full story. One series, I'm not making any proclamations after one series. How did they come back tonight? That'll tell me everything.
Well, maybe they were tired from running around the bases all those times at Yankee Stadium and then Friday night against the Astros. It is good to see that Westberg, after he got kneed by Soto, has bounced back nicely. Thank you very much. However, he's been a little shaky defensively here.
No.
He's had four errors in the last couple of weeks when he had none into the season. So I'm not saying that he's a liability with the glove, because he's not. He could play multiple positions for you. But, you know, mental error, maybe it's all part of that fatigue starting to set in a little bit for them. Ramon Urias had an errant throw yesterday, and this is a Gold Glove level guy. So maybe it is. They'll never say it's an excuse, but maybe, just maybe, this could be a problem for them.
Gunnar doesn't look tired.
Well, last couple of days he has. By the way, the Orioles have hit homers in 22 consecutive games, and he's reached base in 30 for the Ravens. 5880-1057 the Fan here on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend, everyone. The Orioles didn't. Talk more about that. Show goes on. We're less than a month away from training camp 2024. Bob Adi, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass, here to talk about the upcoming camp process for the Ravens. Expectations are high. From BaltimoreSports.com, let's welcome back to the show our buddy Todd Karpovich. Todd, what's happening?
What's up, Todd?
What's up, guys?
All right, Todd, we'll start with Zach Orr replacing Mike McDonald as the defensive coordinator. And, you know, if you think about it, all right, he just ascended. He's moved rapidly up through the ranks as a coach. Question is, concern level for you with the fact that he hasn't called plays, and his staff, replacements for the Denard Wilsons and the Anthony Weavers of the world, are relatively young in NFL terms as coaches themselves.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's going to be some hiccups, but I think, you know, John Harbaugh is an experienced coach, and he's going to put a support system in there for Zach Orr to make it comfortable. In addition, you know, Orr's already said, you know, they're not going to reinvent the wheel here. You know, they're going to run some of the same playbook they had under Mike McDonald, which would be smart, considering the transition. He said he'll add more wrinkles, but, you know, generally speaking, the base defense will be there. The guys like him. The question mark is he's going to be able to call all the plays with the defensive line, linebacker, secondary. So that's going to be the biggest challenge for him. He said he'll call plays on the sideline, so he's right in front of the action. But, yeah, there's going to be an adjustment there. But I think you'll see the Ravens being aggressive defense, and I think the players are going to rally around him. I think he'll be okay.
Now, staying on defense, on the defensive line in particular, your opinion, most likely to have a bigger year than they did in 23, Broderick Washington or Travis Jones?
I think Broderick Washington, man, he's looking really good in camp. You know, he's sort of an unsung guy, you know, because he plays a certain amount of DK's shadow. But he looked really good in camp, came in shape, he's aggressive. I think he'll get more chances to get to the quarterback, you know, same amount of DK did. And don't get me wrong, Travis Jones is a good player. He's played solid also throughout camp. But he's been solid throughout his career with the Ravens. But I think you're going to see more from Broderick Washington this year, especially getting to the quarterback.
Hey, Todd, have we heard about any receivers being in Miami yet?
Lamar, you know, he says they got to come to him. You know, and Flowers is already down there. I'm not sure those two will work out. I don't know where Bateman trains. I could see, you know.
In Arizona.
Yeah, with Mark Andrews. I could see Aguilar going down there, maybe. And Tom Wallace maybe throwing the ball around. But, you know, I don't think this is. It's going to be a formal meeting the way the Ravens would like it to be. I think they're going to wait the training camp to get together and sort of get on the same page. Now, Lamar has played with all these guys the previous season. He's a two-time MVP. So I don't think it's overly concerning, but it would look good with the eye test if they all got together and practiced down in Florida.
Hey, Todd, when the season's over, the top four receivers with attempts, catches, is going to be who?
I think Flowers, including the tight ends?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It'll be Flowers, Andrews, I think. Likely, and then maybe even Walker, you know, before Bateman. You know, we'll see. They want to get Bateman more involved in this offense. But again, you know, what's the trust factor there with Lamar? You know, he had some moments in mandatory minicamp where he looked at his OTAs, he looked like he's pouting a little bit, the ball wasn't coming his way. So we'll see. You know, it's supposed to be a breakout year for Bateman. He got a contract, but we'll have to see. I think Andrews is still going to be Lamar's go-to guy. I think the Lakers going to play a bigger role in offense, and Flowers is the guy who's going to do in his rookie season. I think Flowers and Andrews have the best chance of 1,000-yard receiving seasons.
Now, Todd, I think it was you that wrote about likely being at the tight end camp with all the tight ends. Talk about that a little bit.
He was like, you know, Travis Kelce, Kittle, you know, so he's in there with guys who are proven players, and I think that's a good rapport. You know, it's sort of a charity event also, tight end university. It's down in Nashville, but, you know, that's you know, like he's a guy who's worked out. He's worked out hard throughout the offseason, came in and practiced all the OTAs, mandatory minicamp, and now he's doing his work for the summer. And that was John Harbaugh's message, too. Make sure you do your work. You know, he expects these guys to come in July on that Saturday and be ready to practice. He's not spending time getting these guys back into shape. You know, they got to hit the ground running. And the Ravens, you know, this is going to be a big year for them. You know, they want to push for a Super Bowl. Now, the question is, do they have the depth to do that? We'll see.
Hey, Todd, I thought my impressions of likely was – that's the most athletic I've ever seen him look. And he just stood out. I you know, he was a guy that you noticed.
Yeah, he's a guy, he's making one-handed grabs. He's creating matchup problems. You know, linebackers can't cover him, you know. So you got to put his, you know, I mean, a double team with a safety in a corner. He's a guy who can also play the wide receiver and get downfield. So, yeah, he's a major weapon. And I think they will use a lot more two tight end sets with him and Andrews this year. But I think likely we can go outside and play him more like a receiver. And that's going to create some serious matchup problems if both those guys can stay healthy.
All right, Todd. We got Stanley at left tackle. And I'm guessing Voorhees' job to lose at the left guard. Then we got Lindebaum. And then who do we have?
I think right now we got, you know, Ben Cleveland at right guard. But Josh Jones had a really good camp. He looked really good, and they're really high on him. I think he surprised them with his ability to play. And I think, you know, Rosengarten at right tackle, you know, he's a second-round pick. He's a guy also who's coming from big-time programs. So I think it's his job to lose. Cleveland and Jones in that right guard spot is interesting. Voorhees, they're high on him, too. And they really said, you know, they like McCarry being in that six-man role because he can play all five positions. He'd be a swing guy. You know, that's a valuable piece. And, of course, you know, Jesse Alexander, he moved all these guys around. You know, he had Voorhees playing center at some point, you know. So they like versatility. But right now, I think you got Stanley at left tackle, Voorhees left guard, Lindebaum at center, Cleveland with the edge over Jones at right guard, and then Rosengarten at right tackle over Flaley.
Todd Karpovich, BaltimoreSports.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Going back to the defense guy, had a bust-out year. At 23, was Brandon Stevens. Were the Ravens impressed enough, Todd, to start talking extension with him?
Yeah, I think I said that this week. I think they'll give Stevens another extension for the Humphrey one. He's a guy who works hard. He likes it here. He's a team guy. You know, he's a guy who's gotten better every single year. He can play safety. You know, he's a versatile guy. He can play, you know, multiple positions, and he's a good tackler. So yeah, I think you're going to see Stevens the extension, and then you see Wiggins move into that role for Humphrey as they move forward here. And they got T.J. Campbell also, who can also play. Now there's a reason they drafted two cornerbacks this year.
All right, Todd, what's happening at BaltimoreSports.com here on this Monday?
Still covering the Ravens every day. We know it's a little bit down period here. Still some news, and we're right in the training camp. Also covering the Orioles, looking to bounce back from that disappointing series in Houston.
Yeah, that was a debacle. But we're picking them Ravens crumbs. We're going to eat every inch of meat off that bone, Todd, if you know what I'm saying.
That's the way to go.
There you go. All right, Todd, have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
There's Todd Karpovich, fellow East Baltimorean, Upper Fells Point, as they say, back in the hood when we come back. Well, here's a guy who knows all about it. He's worldly. He's Nolan McGraw's Funhouse is going to be electricity personified. News from the Nest. Talk more about Zach Orr versus Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald early in his tenure as Ravens defensive coordinator. Didn't go well, but season-wide, they were really good, and they were great last year. That's why he's the head coach in Seattle. Buy or sell, 12-15. Let's count that money because it was a busy weekend in the spending world. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. What's happening, everybody? Orioles back on the diamond tonight if they're getting swept in Houston. 6:35 first pitch, Baltimore baseball tonight with yours truly, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken. Joe LaCroix is going to be there. Cordell's Woodland, he'll be popping by. So we're going to be at Pickles. Come on by and say hello. Probably get there about 4 o'clock or so. Brandon Hyde's going to meet with the media at 3:30. Tanner Bibee, 5-2, 365 for Cleveland. He'll be on the Hill. They've won five in a row. They just swept the Blue Jays. Cade Povich, he makes his third start. Or is it his fourth start? Fourth start. As he's searching for that first win, Orioles are trying to get a win after Houston put those bats in the slumberland on Saturday and Sunday. We'll talk about the Indians, by the way. Why are they so good? A team projected to be middle of the pack in their own division. Not even, you know, if they were snipping 500, barely above it. Right now, they have the second best record in the American League. From Cleveland.com, Joe Noga is going to be joining us, and we'll talk about the job that Stephen Vogt has done as the skipper there. Got NFL lunch coming up at 1. Nate Davis, USA Today, talks about NFL with him. And then news from the Nest, of course, every day at noon. But let's bring Nolan McGraw in. Quick draw, how you feeling?
Feeling good. I think we need to get a piggy bank going here every time you say Indians instead of Guardians.
Did I say
Indians? The tax. You're a couple in today already.
Okay.
But over the next 3 days, we might...
Well, we got to wait till buy or sell comes along, right. See if I got any money. I might not have any money to put in that little till. Yes, the Guardians, excuse me.
We take from your 401k and put it here in the jar.
Yeah, well, it's like how many times we're going to call them the San Diego Chargers the week that the Ravens go there.
Oh, that'll be continuing in 10 years.
And we still call them the Oakland Raiders, for crying out loud. It is what it is.
Well,
thanks for pointing that out.
Yes, I'll be sure to mention it every time. But
yes,
obviously not ideal. You get swept over the weekend. The way I look at it, all right, they're clearly gassed. You watch them play. There's just something different. When they got swept a month ago against the Cardinals, they played bad, but they didn't look like this. They were still playing their kind of game. They had errors. They were, you know, a mess all over the place. How did they respond after getting swept? Four-game series against the White Sox, a terrible team, but still, you handle your business, four-game sweep. How do you respond here against Cleveland, a much better team? But to me, that'll tell the full story. One series, I'm not making any proclamations after one series. How did they come back tonight? That'll tell me everything.
Well, maybe they were tired from running around the bases all those times at Yankee Stadium and then Friday night against the Astros. It is good to see that Westberg, after he got kneed by Soto, has bounced back nicely. Thank you very much. However, he's been a little shaky defensively here.
No.
He's had four errors in the last couple of weeks when he had none into the season. So I'm not saying that he's a liability with the glove, because he's not. He could play multiple positions for you. But, you know, mental error, maybe it's all part of that fatigue starting to set in a little bit for them. Ramon Urias had an errant throw yesterday, and this is a Gold Glove level guy. So maybe it is. They'll never say it's an excuse, but maybe, just maybe, this could be a problem for them.
Gunner doesn't look tired.
Well, last couple of days he has. By the way, the Orioles have hit homers in 22 consecutive games, and he's reached base in 30 straight games.
Well, we said coming into the month, I mean, we knew what the schedule was. It was a huge talking point before it started, one off day in the entire month of June. So you knew what it was. The fact that they made it this far without showing really any signs of fatigue is kind of incredible. But again, how do you rebound? Because the month's not over yet. Get through this entire week here, seven straight days, nice off day coming next Monday, but tough competition between now and then.
No, it's a tough ask to have Cade Povich come out and try to stymie Cleveland. By the way, Bibee, his last start, he had 12 Ks and six innings against Seattle. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Let's go to the Funhouse.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
This texter here says it was unreasonable to expect Suarez to maintain his success as a starter the entire season. Get him in the pen as soon as you can. Let him thrive there as a long man.
Well, I think that's what their plan is. Yeah. They just have to bring someone in to replace him in the rotation. That could also be what Cole Irvin's deal will be, but I don't see them getting two or three starting pitchers. Dean Kramer needs to come back and come back effectively. That's going to be key for them. But yeah, Suarez, he got rocked in the first inning yesterday, settled down, pitched through five when it didn't look like he was going to make it through the first inning, and he had command problems against the Yankees. Again, he's not a liability. Maybe as a starting pitcher, he's becoming one.
Speaking of the pitching market here, this texter says, if the pitching trade market is limited, I wouldn't rule out a Flaherty reunion. As weird as it may be to trade prospects in back-to-back years for the same rental, the O's have to make a move, and if he's one of the only guys available, you got to try.
He's an upgrade over what they got going out there right now in some instances. And he's been a big strikeout guy for the Tigers all season long. And you go from the outhouse to the penthouse, which is what he kind of did last year because the Cardinals weren't that great. Maybe that would rejuvenate him and maybe come back and say, hey, look, I sucked for you last year. He's familiar with a lot of the guys in the clubhouse. Maybe it'd be a more comfortable situation. Who knows?
You know what? Elias has got to just face the fact that I got to overpay. You know, he's going to have to. He doesn't want to, but if he wants somebody, he's going to have to.
Overpay in what?
To get a pitcher.
Prospect-wise?
Yeah, whatever it takes, he's going to have to overpay. Because there's so many, the competition's going to be strong, and he's going to have to overpay.
I think even if it was a normal year, and you had an abundance of teams that were selling off pitchers, the deadline always kind of breeds that desperation. So I kind of agree with that. You know, they are going to get, not fleeced, but on paper, I wouldn't be surprised if all the grades are, oh, on paper, the Orioles lost this trade.
But do you really think they're going to assume a big contract?
I don't know about what the owner's saying.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
This texter here says, thankful that the O's were able to get through the New York series before the schedule got to them. Those head-to-heads will matter most in the long run. Also thankful New York is slumping just as much, if not more, than the O's right now.
Well, the dog days of summer are upon us here. And the Yankees, they have the Mets, who have shown a pulse here as of late in their next series. They're off today. Orioles right now just have to handle their own business and everything will take care of itself. But it's not an easy task because you have Cleveland, the Guardians, Nolan, give me my quarterback, and then the Texas Rangers. Last time they were here, they were making life miserable for the Orioles. And Max Scherzer made his return yesterday. Yep. And I'm thinking that his scheduled turn in the rotation might be against the Birds coming up this weekend. It's 5880-1057 The Fan. We'll come back. News from the Nest. Going to talk about the Ravens and in particular Zach Orr replacing Mike McDonald. What does all of this mean in the big picture? We don't know. But did Mike McDonald's first few games maybe give you an idea of what Zach Orr would have to deal with? Buy or sell? Where's that money? And then Joe Noga is going to be joining us from Cleveland.com talking about the Guardians and why they are so good, and they're good here in 2024. Ending world. 5880-1057 The Fan. What's happening, everybody? Orioles back on the diamond tonight if they're getting swept in Houston. 6:35 first pitch, Baltimore baseball tonight with yours truly, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken. Joe LaCroix is going to be there. Cordell Woodland, he'll be popping by. So we're going to be at Pickles. Come on by and say hello. Probably get there about 4 o'clock or so. Brandon Hyde's going to meet with the media at 3:30. Tanner Bibee, 5-2, 365 for Cleveland. He'll be on the hill. They've won 5 in a row. They just swept the Blue Jays. Cade Povich, he makes his third start. Or is it his fourth start? Fourth start. As he's searching for that first win. Orioles are trying to get a win after Houston put those bats in the slumberland on Saturday and Sunday. We'll talk about the Indians, by the way. Why are they so good? A team projected to be middle of the pack in their own division. Not even, you know, if they were snipping 500, barely above it. Right now, they have the second best record in the American League. From Cleveland.com, Joe Noga is going to be joining us. And we'll talk about the job that Stephen Vogt has done as the skipper there. Got NFL lunch coming up at 1. Nate Davis, USA Today, talks about NFL with him. And then news from the Nest, of course, every day at noon. But let's bring Nolan McGraw in. Quick draw, how you feeling?
Feeling good. I think we need to get a piggy bank going here every time you say Indians instead of Guardians.
Did I
pay
say Indians?
The tax. You're a couple in today already.
Okay.
But over the next 3 days, we might...
Well, we got to wait till buy or sell comes along, right? See if I got any money. I might not have any money to put in that little till. Yes, the Guardians, excuse me.
Well, you take from your 401k and put it here in the jar.
Yeah, well, it's like how many times we're going to call them the San Diego Chargers the week that the Ravens go there.
Oh, that'll be continuing in 10 years.
And we'll still call them the Oakland Raiders, for crying out loud. It is what it is.
Well,
thanks for pointing that out.
Yes, I'll be sure to mention it every time. But
yes,
obviously not ideal. You get swept over the weekend. The way I look at it, all right, they're clearly gassed. You watch them play. There's just something different. When they got swept a month ago against the Cardinals, they played bad, but they didn't look like this. They were still playing their kind of game. They had errors. They were, a mess all over the place. How did they respond after getting swept? Four-game series against the White Sox, a terrible team, but still, you handle your business, four-game sweep. How do you respond here against Cleveland, a much better team? But to me, that'll tell the full story. One series, I'm not making any proclamations after one series. How did they come back tonight? That'll tell me everything.
Well, maybe they were tired from running around the bases all those times at Yankee Stadium and then Friday night against the Astros. It is good to see that Westberg, after he got kneed by Soto, has bounced back nicely. Thank you very much. However, he's been a little shaky defensively here.
No.
He's had four errors in the last couple of weeks when he had none into the season. So I'm not saying that he's a liability with the glove, because he's not. He could play multiple positions for you. But, mental error, maybe it's all part of that fatigue starting to set in a little bit for them. Ramon Urias had an errant throw yesterday, and this is a gold glove level guy. So maybe it is. They'll never say it's an excuse. But maybe, just maybe, this could be a problem for them.
Gunner doesn't look tired.
Well, last couple of days he has. By the way, the Orioles have hit homers in 22 consecutive games, and he's reached base in 30 straight games.
Well, we said coming into the month, we knew what the schedule was. It was a huge talking point before it started, one off day in the entire month of June. So you knew what it was. The fact that they made it this far without showing really any signs of fatigue is kind of incredible. But again, how do you rebound? Because the month's not over yet. You got get through this entire week here, seven straight days, nice off day coming next Monday, but tough competition between now and then.
No, it's a tough ask to have Kate Povich come out and try to stymie Cleveland. By the way, Bibee, his last start, he had 12 Ks and six innings against Seattle. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Let's go to the Funhouse.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
This texter here says it was unreasonable to expect Suarez to maintain his success as a starter the entire season. Get him in the pen as soon as you can. Let him thrive there as a long man.
Well, I think that's what their plan is. Yeah. They just have to bring someone in to replace him in the rotation. That could also be what Cole Irvin's deal will be, but I don't see them getting two or three starting pitchers. Dean Kramer needs to come back and come back effectively. That's going to be key for them. But yeah, Suarez, he got rocked in the first inning yesterday, settled down, pitched through five when it didn't look like he was going to make it through the first inning, and he had command problems against the Yankees. Again, he's not a liability. Maybe as a starting pitcher, he's becoming one.
Speaking of the pitching market here, this texter says, if the pitching trade market is limited, I wouldn't rule out a Flaherty reunion. As weird as it may be to trade prospects in back-to-back years for the same rental, the O's have to make a move. And if he's one of the only guys available, you got to try.
He's an upgrade over what they got going out there right now in some instances. And he's been a big strikeout guy for the Tigers all season long. And you go from the outhouse to the penthouse, which is what he kind of did last year because the Cardinals weren't that great. Maybe that would rejuvenate him and maybe come back and say, hey, look, I sucked for you last year. He's familiar with a lot of the guys in the clubhouse. Maybe it'd be a more comfortable situation. Who knows?
You know what? Elias has got to just face the fact that I got to overpay. He's going to have to. He doesn't want to, but if he wants somebody, he's going to have to.
Overpay in what?
To get a pitcher.
Prospect-wise?
Yeah, whatever it takes, he's going to have to overpay. because there's so many, the competition's going to be strong and he's going to have to overpay.
I think even if it was a normal year and you had an abundance of teams that were selling off pitchers, the deadline always kind of breeds that desperation. So I kind of agree with that. You know, they are going to get, not fleeced, but on paper, I wouldn't be surprised if all the grades are, oh, on paper, the Orioles lost this
but
trade.
But do you really think they're going to assume a big contract?
I don't know about what the owner's saying.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
This texter here says, thankful that the O's were able to get through the New York series before the schedule got to them. Those head-to-heads will matter most in the long run. Also thankful New York is slumping just as much, if not more, than the O's right now.
Well, the dog days of summer are upon us here. And the Yankees, they have the Mets, who have shown a pulse here as of late in their next series. They're off today. Orioles right now just have to handle their own business and everything will take care of itself. But it's not an easy task because you have Cleveland, the Guardians, Nolan, give me my quarterback, and then the Texas Rangers. Last time they were here, they were making life miserable for the Orioles. And Max Scherzer made his return yesterday. Yep. And I'm thinking that his scheduled turn in the rotation might be against the Birds coming up this weekend. It's 5881057 The Fan. We'll come back. News from the Nest. Going to talk about the Ravens and in particular Zach Orr replacing Mike McDonald. What does all of this mean in the big picture? We don't know. But did Mike McDonald's first few games maybe give you an idea of what Zach Orr would have to deal with? Buy or sell? Where's that money? And then Joe Noga is going to be joining us from Cleveland.com talking about the Guardians and why they are so good, and they're good here in 2024.